One of the most incredible capital sources is revenue. Why? It is non-dilutive. It's also a validation that your customers value what you are providing.
If we look at Shopify, would you believe that they actually began as an online store selling snowboarding equipment?
Many startups in the world today, at their later stages, have founders who own only single digits of the business. Melanie Perkins of Canva, or the founder of Stitch Fix, Katrina, they own around 16-10%. This is actually a healthy amount of equity to own for your business at a later stage.
Have you ever heard of Segun Otunala, founder of Therapy Brands? He raised a small angel round in the early days. He chose not to raise any more additional venture capital funding until he raised a growth round of 20 million. He went on to sell his company to KKR.
Welcome to The Startup Leap, the number one podcast interviewing startup founders who have taken the leap.
On The Startup Leap, we hear real, raw and relatable stories of how they've navigated taking the leap. We're your hosts.
I'm Yvonne.
And I'm Maria.
And this is the Startup Leap podcast.
Any statements made by Maria, Yvonne, or the Startup Leap guests are solely their view and are not advice.
Welcome back to another episode of the Startup Leap podcast, where we share real stories and real lessons with founders who have taken the leap. I'm Maria.
And I'm Yvonne, and today we're diving into a very common dilemma with startup founders, whether or not to seek VC funding.
Now, VC funding isn't for every business. It's not a fit for every business model. And in this episode, we'll be digging into how to think about whether or not to accept VC funding, or also even whether or not to accept outside equity capital in general.
Now, this isn't just for first-time founders. Although this will be a great resource for first-time founders, as investors, we're also seeing a lot of experienced founders begin to think deeply about whether they want to raise VC funding or not, or at least raising from the very beginning.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about fundraising or evaluating VC as a potential capital source, this video may actually have something to offer you.
So you may be wondering, why are we speaking about this? If this is your first time, great question. Welcome. Maria and I are early stage investors, and we've evaluated thousands of startups across Europe and Africa and invested over $200 million in companies to date.
Now, at the end of this video, we are sure you are going to leave with some new information that you probably didn't know before, but might aid your decision on whether or not to take VC funding. Now, let's get into it. What exactly is VC and how does it work? Now, VCs are essentially financial institutions that invest in companies to create returns for their original investors. Imagine a business owner who started maybe a bakery or a coffee shop, and they realize that things are going well, but they just need more money to grow their business. They need more money to get customers. They need more money to hire really smart people. They know that that business is scalable. They know that they can capture the market, but they simply don't have the capital for it. This is where VC comes in, because they come in very early. They give you cash, but it has expectations. They say, we give you this money for a piece of your business. So we're essentially owning the business with you, and we're in a partnership of sorts. And you can use that capital to grow the business, achieve those ambitious goals, and then give them returns.
Now, one of the key questions you might want to ask yourself if you're deciding between whether to take venture capital funding or not is, what problem are you solving with the capital that you're raising? Is it a high growth and massive opportunity with high margins? When we think about VC-backed companies, they are really fast-growth companies and a massive market opportunity. Oftentimes, they are going to be the monopoly within a particular industry. So is the company tech-enabled? That definitely is a key marker for venture-backed companies, simply because it will mean for higher margins versus a non-tech-enabled business. And a common benchmark, particularly in the early days, if it's a B2B SaaS company, for example, is, can this company get to $1 million in revenue over the next 12, 18 months? And can it get to $100 million in revenues over the next, say, 5 years? A really good example is on a previous episode that we did with, say, founder of Hutch and Pimento. He shared the story of how with one of his early companies, Hutch, he actually went and had a number of conversations with VCs. And after speaking to VCs, he realized that VC wasn't the path that he wanted to take for that particular business, just because it didn't follow that potential trajectory of getting to $100 million in revenues. Another great example, because sometimes it may not seem to be a fast growth opportunity to begin with, but as the company develops, scales, opportunities may arise. And so if we look at Shopify, would you believe that they actually began as an online store selling snowboarding equipment?
Crazy.
So crazy. The founders actually turned the software they had created to run their own store into a scalable platform for other businesses. And Shopify is a success story that we know it to be today.
Now, another example is also Twilio. So Twilio started as a consulting business for communication issues. And then they realized, wait, we actually could build a business that helps other businesses solve these communication issues. So like Yvonne said, it might start off as a company that seems small or seems like a limited scope, but you could actually grow from there into a venture backable business. Now, one other question that's important to ask is, are you okay with diluting equity and sharing decision-making power? This one is very important because it's natural to have an attachment to your business as a founder. But if you are trying to scale your vision with external capital, this infers that you are bringing external co-owners on board. And it means that you will have to concede some of those decision-making rights. And this is common, especially in VC-backed businesses that raise multiple rounds of funding, because with each round of funding, you're going to be diluted in your ownership, because each round is essentially you selling a piece of your company for cash and giving away equity. Now, this isn't always a bad thing. Many startups in the world today, at their later stages, close to IPO, or even at IPO, have founders who own only single digits of the business. Google's Larry and Sergey, they own only a little bit over 11% of the company. Those were the founders. Melanie Perkins of Canva, or the founder of Stitch Fix, Katrina, they own around 16, 10%. This is actually a healthy amount of equity to own for your business at a later stage. So just to give you a sense that the more you raise VC funding, the more you actually don't own a huge part of your business. And this can have, you know, pros and cons. The pros there is being able to sell pieces of your company to give you capital to supercharge your outcomes. The cons, in a sense, is that you actually could be fired from your company or pressured to resign at the later stages, because at the later stages, you don't own majority of the company anymore. And the board reports to the shareholders, and the board can fire the CEO, which is often the founder of the company. So if you think about this, we've had examples in the past, like Steve Jobs. He ran Apple for 9 years, after which there was conflict within the company and the board of directors and strategic focus going forward, and he stepped down. The same thing happened to Travis Kalanick of Uber. So this is not uncommon, but it's just two sides to a coin, something to think about. As you think about all of this, also remember, 100% of nothing is less than a small percentage of a large company. So it's all about trade-offs.
That is so true. And just to add to that, coming back to decision-making and whether you want to give away complete decision-making in the early days, have you ever heard of Segun Otunlala, an incredible founder of Therapy Brands? Now, he raised a very small angel round in the early days, 250K to start his business. Over 5 years, he chose not to raise any more additional venture capital funding until he raised a growth round of 20 million. He went on to sell his company to KKR for $1.25 billion. Now, reason why I wanted to flag his story is because sometimes it may be that you don't want to give up full control of the business in the early days, but as the business grows and scales, you may feel that it's appropriate later on down the line, and that's okay.
And whether or not you are VC-backed or not, being capital efficient really helps you in the earlier stages, especially because you take that going forward and you can limit dilution, but not trade off on growth.
Now, the next thing that we want to touch on is whether you could actually generate the type of returns that venture investors actually require. Let's put it into perspective. A seed stage investor typically looks for companies to generate an 100x return. So if I invest $1 million into your company, I'm expecting $100 million as an outcome when you achieve that liquidation point. And the ideal liquidation event would be an IPO or an acquisition by a larger company. And so the quick question is that something that you want? And is this something that you truly believe you can achieve? What this typically means is that you will need to build a business that can generate a value of at least $1 billion. Now, I think founders really have to be honest with themselves and really think about whether that's something they can truly achieve and what does it take to truly get there. And if that's not the case, that is absolutely fine. You can still generate wealth and a really great outcome for yourself. Let's take Tim, for example. In one of our earlier episodes, Tim Armu shared how he very intentionally decided not to raise venture capital funding, and he still generated an 8-figure exit for himself and a very incredible return for his angel investors as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think success is measured many different ways. Remember, these are just points for you to think about how you consider VC funding, not necessarily to encourage you or dissuade you either way. It's just important to have all the cards on the table and then you can make a decision. Now, on to another thing to consider. Have you considered other alternatives to venture capital? Oftentimes people just think, oh, I have a startup idea. It seems to have some initial market traction. I should raise VC. I would say pause. One of the most incredible capital sources is actually revenue. Why? It is non-dilutive. And it's also a validation that your customers value what you're providing. It also helps you unlock potential revenue-based financing. So I would say consider other options. Revenue is one. Your customers, you know, coins are better than investor dollars because investor dollars are very expensive. But we understand the limitations of customer revenue in the early stages. It might not be large enough for you to have a good runway to really target the market, but don't knock it. One of our episodes with Carmel Cadet of MTech, she had a $500,000 pilot contract. That is the size of some pre-seed round these days. So it is important to consider revenue. Other things you can consider are essentially crowdfunding. So crowdfunding is a common option, but not everyone really thinks about it as a viable option. One of our guests on our episodes, Go Henry's Louise Hill, he actually raised crowdfunding. And this is essentially, like the name implies, the crowd gives you money, but they don't give you money directly. There's often an intermediary regulated platform that facilitates the conversation, but you do need to, they are investors and you do need to pitch and get them on board. So that's one other way. The other thing that I would say is even in the venture capital, you know, ish funding source is angel investments. And then family offices. Now, angel investments, it sounds fancy, but it's essentially anybody you know who has money and will give you money to invest in your business for a lucrative exit, you know, at the end. But the difference between angel investments is they might not be expecting that $1 billion outcome. A moderate exit is good for them. So if you can pretty much paint that picture, it might help. I would say that for the family offices, this is similar to angel investments because they tend to be family offices of people who have had wealth in maybe entrepreneurship activities or commercial activities. So they're internal, you know, family VCs, you can call them. But they are often not as, you know, institutionalized as traditional VCs, and they might be okay with some moderate return. So these are all the other options to consider. We're very well aware that in the early stages, it's hard to unlock things like revenue-based financing or debts because you're just getting started. So we understand that that's difficult, but there's many other ways you can slice and dice this.
I love that. And one example that comes to mind is actually Calendly. Now, I'm sure every single one of our listeners is familiar with Calendly or at some point used Calendly. Topi Owontona, the founder of Calendly, actually bootstrapped his business in the initial stages where he invested 200,000K of his own money. And he really used that to build and scale the business up until the point where he was generating tens of millions of dollars in revenue and he raised a 350 million rounds. So even if you do choose to bootstrap, you can still achieve great scale. Today, the company is valued at over $3 billion. So definitely consider alternative means as well if that's a potential option for you.
Absolutely. And this brings to mind the fact that we had an episode with Sabrina, and she built a financial regtech company that helps banks comply with product management and, you know, regulated areas. And she didn't raise a single penny in VC funding. She targeted with angels. She got grants. She got funding from co-workers that she had worked in the past, bosses she had worked with, and even some family office type arrangements. So there are other ways to consider, you know, bootstrapping, taking a while before you go into VC, especially if you can't raise VC funding or it's difficult anyways, it doesn't mean that there isn't success there. There are many people who've done it. But to be honest, it's harder because you have less capital. It's probably longer. You probably won't grow as much, but success is measured many different ways. So yeah, that's one way to think about it.
So that's our 5 points. Are you ready for an exhilarating and potentially rewarding journey over the next 5 years, 5 to 10 years, if you choose to take the venture capital route? It can be intense. It can be emotionally, physically, psychologically, a bit of a roller coaster. Rapid changes, constantly having to, make improvements. But if you're looking to build a massive business that will achieve like a generational outcome, then VC is the one to consider.
Absolutely, it's rewarding to see your impact across the world. Many VC-backed companies have influenced the way we live. Imagine a world without maybe Uber or Amazon or all these tech companies. They have influenced the way we live, so there is potential that maybe something you're building can do the same. The other thing I will say is because of the nature of VC, you tend to need to raise rounds every couple of years. It's just the nature of the asset class. And it's not because you're not in sustainable business. Many people who raise rounds in VC are generating revenue, but because these growth outcomes and milestones are so ambitious, they tend to always need funding to hit that next aggressive milestone. So if you aren't psychologically ready, or you don't believe that you want to go through that in the next 5 to 10 years, some people consider it a challenge. I would say be prepared for that roller coaster. It can be exhausting, but it can also be exhilarating. But whatever it is, choose which one works for you. Success is measured many different ways.
Absolutely. And with the advances in AI, the cost of building a business is becoming significantly cheaper as well.
So those are five different ways to think about whether or not you want to consider VC funding. So just to recap, first, what is VC? Someone gave a company a pot of money to invest in startups and they're expecting returns. So the outcome has to be large. Many times they have many portfolios. And they want one to succeed so that it can return the portfolio. So the outcomes are quite massive. Two, what problem are you solving with this capital? Is it big enough? Is it ambitious enough? Can it realistically give those returns that you believe will make it worthwhile for the investors? Three, are you okay with diluting equity and sharing decision-making power? 100% of nothing is less than 10% of a large business. As you think of VC, you are also conceding some powers and you're also choosing accountability and working with external parties to achieve a larger vision. Four, can you provide a lucrative exit? As VCs invest, they're also thinking about when they get out of that investment in multiple folds. So, is there an avenue within the business model that you've chosen for them to be able to do that? It helps if there is. If there isn't, maybe VC isn't the one for you. Maybe you can build a strong, solid business that gives some angel investors dividends or something. And five, have you explored other options aside from VC? VC is often the first thing people think about, but is it the best thing? Have you considered revenue-based financing? Have you considered grants? Have you considered angel funding, family offices, crowdfunding? Check all of these out because we have episodes that have touched on many of those. And of course, it's going to be an exhilarating experience. Either way, if you decide whether or not to go through via VC or not via VC, we hope that we've been able to give you some things to think about as you make the decision.
Thank you for joining us today. Tell us what you think in the comments. We would love to hear how you're thinking about these things. Let's keep the conversation going. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Leave a review. Tell us what you think of this episode on all of our platforms at the Startup Leap Pod. Do you have a question? Ask us and we'll ask our guests. Go to thestartupleap.io. See you next time.